Welcome to Lessons from a PhD, where every single episode teaches you different lessons to make your PhD and career journey easier. Hello, everyone. My name is Dr. Anna Ao, and I am your host for Lessons from a PhD. Thank you so much for tuning into today's episode, where we will be building off of episode 2. So shameless plug, if you haven't already listened to the previous episode, I suggest you pause, listen to the previous episode, and then come back to this one. Because we are going to be building off of my story about how I wanted to go into dental school, but didn't really work out for me. So instead, I decided to follow my interest into doing a master's in chemistry, and then eventually go into a PhD. So the point of today's podcast will be to talk about resilience. Now, don't worry, I'm going to be sharing the tea of my PhD journey in a minute, but you're also going to see how resilience played a really big role in my graduate school journey. Now, being resilient is a skill that is very useful in life, and it's a skill that I actually learned in graduate school. Now, what does resilience mean? Dictionary definition says that it's the capacity to withstand or to recover quickly from difficulties. And so you're going to see how there are so many difficulties that came up during my PhD journey, but I continued to push through, and that's what led me to finishing my PhD and to pushing through to where I am today. So that being said, let's get into it. Okay, so continuing off of episode 2, I kind of discussed my journey through master's, and I think I left off speaking about how I graduated from my master's. Well, that was a huge accomplishment in itself, but it didn't stop there. Because at that time, I would say that I was still grieving not getting into dental school, and I didn't know what to do instead. So I had this degree, I had my master's in chemistry, and I didn't know what to do with it. And I'm sure a lot of you may be in the same boat where you have this degree from undergrad and you don't know how to use it. And to be honest, I wouldn't blame yourself. I would just say that it's just lack of exposure and lack of exposure to the different careers out there that you can do with different degrees. And so me personally, I did not know a lot of people who had a master's in chemistry just because I was not in the environment. And I'm sure if you were a science undergrad at some point, you could probably relate to this, but I remember when I was doing my undergraduate in biopharmaceutical studies, like I mentioned in the previous episode, you know, many of my classmates, we would kind of talk about what we wanted to do, what our desires were in life. And the majority, I would say that people wanted to go either to med school, to dental school, to optometry school, vet school, one of those professional schools. But no one really talked about, oh, I want a science degree to pursue research. Or I'm doing a science degree because I want to work in a pharma company. Oh, I'm doing a science degree because I want to start a biotech company. Like, no one really spoke about that. And so I wasn't really privy to the information of, you know, these are the different types of careers that you can do with a science degree. And I only thought that, you know, a science degree would be good to go into one of those professional schools. So for me, I just think it was lack of exposure, which is why I didn't know specifically what to do with my degree. So after my master's, I decided to move back home to live with my parents, and I just kind of picked up odd jobs here and there. So I started tutoring because I've always loved teaching. So I started just my own tutoring company where I would tutor either high school students or university students in chemistry or biology. I also taught piano as well because I knew how to play piano, and again, I love teaching. And then I also worked at Starbucks as well. And let me just tell you, working at Starbucks was so much fun. It was a really fun job. But I know it wasn't sustainable. Like, this was just something to kind of keep me going and keep me busy until I figured out what I wanted to do. So I remember there was one time where I was tutoring, and I went to tutor at my university that I did my undergrad in. And after my tutoring session, I remember I was in the chemistry building. And, you know, I just thought, why don't I go visit this one professor, which I did a co-op program with. So I went up to see if he was around, and he was in his office, knocked on his door, and then we had a really good conversation. He was happy to see me because I think it had been 2 years. I hadn't seen him since I I hadn't seen him since I finished my undergrad. And so he just kind of asked, like, how is your master's? What are you up to in life and everything? And I was very candid with him, and I was telling him about how I did want to go into dental school, but that didn't work out. And so now I'm kind of in a place where I don't really know what direction to take. And I kind of just went in there wanting to seek his advice. And so at that time, it was probably in the fall. Sometime in the fall, and he was like, you know, well, have you ever thought of doing a PhD? And that honestly did not even cross my mind at all. I remember when I was doing my master's, I was like, yeah, this is great, but this is enough. I will never do a PhD. But then at the time, I think I was more open to it just because I wasn't doing anything. And also, I was familiar with his research because I had spent a couple months doing a co-op program there. So I knew his research and I liked his research. And his research was actually very close to the research that I did in my master's as well. And on top of that, he was very convincing, I would say. He was someone who, you know, he really knows how to make things look attractive and kind of convince you to do something. And so after talking to him, it was now a consideration. And I went home thinking, okay, well, what about doing a PhD? And I remember I spoke to my parents about it. And obviously, African parents, they're all for education. So they jumped on that idea. They're like, yeah, you know, that's a great idea. Why not? You could be a doctor. So after thinking about it some more, I was like, you know what? At this time, I'm not really doing anything with my life. So why not just spend another 4 or 5 years in school to get another degree? Like, why not? You know? Now, let me just say, I don't recommend anyone doing a PhD because they're bored or because they don't know what else to do. I mean, luckily, going through the whole PhD program, I realized that that is where I was supposed to be. I feel like God directed my path in that way. But I would just say generally, I wouldn't advise anyone to commit another 4 or 5 years of your life to a PhD program if you're not 100% sold on it. And also if you have no use for it in the future. Okay. Now, I just want to pause here and I want to emphasize again something that I mentioned in the previous episode, and that is that whatever is for you is absolutely for you. Because if you notice that I just got into my PhD program from a simple conversation with a professor that I had worked with before, and that kind of just bypassed me through the whole application process and gave me a guaranteed seat in my PhD. And so reminding you from the previous episode again, how much I had to struggle to get into dental school. So again, this was kind of confirmation for me that this is exactly where I needed to be and that God was really directing me in the path of doing a PhD. So one thing about a PhD program is that it's very time consuming. It's going to be the focus of your life for the next 4 to 5 years, right? And so another thing too is that typically PhD topics are very, very narrow. So before you enter a PhD program, I would highly suggest that you are very interested in the topic that the lab is specifically, you know, focusing on. And when I say the topics are very narrow, what I mean by that is that, you know, even though I have a PhD in chemistry, it doesn't mean that I am knowledgeable in everything chemistry, because there are so many different strands to chemistry. There's organic chemistry, there's biological chemistry, there's computational chemistry, there's inorganic chemistry. There are a lot of different areas of chemistry. However, my PhD research was specifically on carbohydrate chemistry and cryobiology, which is, like, I would say, very, very small section in chemistry. And so PhD topics are typically very, very specific. So I would just say, make sure that it's something that you're passionate about and something that you can see yourself studying for the next 4 to 5 years. Another thing that I would highly recommend before getting into a PhD program is to vet out the supervisor as well, because having a good supervisor can really make or break your PhD experience. Okay, so going into a PhD is more than just being interested in the research. You know, you can be super interested in the research, but the lab environments may be very toxic and your PhD supervisor may not be, nice or supportive at all, and it will break your PhD experience. So the one thing about your PhD supervisor is that they should also be your mentor. They should also be your advocate as well. So it should be a supervisor that is present and involved in your day-to-day. Like, for example, my PhD supervisor, we would see him in the lab at least like 2 to 3 times a week, just kind of checking on us. His office was down the hallway. So if we had any questions, we could typically just swing by his office. We had access to him. We had his phone number. We can text him. You know, he made himself available so that whenever we needed help, he was there. Another thing as well is that your PhD supervisor should be your advocate and should help provide opportunities for you as well. Because, you know, a lot of times PhD supervisors are privy to all these types of opportunities out there, and they're the ones that can funnel it down to their students as well. So to make the most out of your PhD experience, you're going to want to go to conferences. You're going to want to be able to publish papers. You're going to want to be able to expose the research that you're doing in your lab. So if your supervisor is able to advocate for you in that way, to give you that exposure, it can really help push your career forward. And just speaking about publishing too, it's really good to have a supervisor that is interested in publishing. You know, I know that some universities, in order to graduate from your PhD, you are required to publish, I mean, I think it's maybe about 1 or 2 papers. It depends per university. And so if your supervisor isn't interested in publishing at all, then it's not going to help you. You may have to spend longer doing your PhD because you're unable to publish that quickly. Okay. Another thing too that you should look out for is that, you know, your supervisor should also give you space to create. You know, the one thing that I loved about my PhD is that I was able to think of an idea and then run with it. You know, I was able to think of something that I wanted to do and then research into it. My supervisor really gave me that space to kind of create, to run with ideas, as long as it was within the scope of the research topics that we were looking into. So, you know, PhD is great because it does challenge your mind, but it also brings out that creativity in you. And so you don't want to be limited when it comes to creativity just because of your supervisor. Okay, so supervisors, super important, I would say, when considering whether to do a PhD in a specific lab or not. Another thing that's very important is the lab environment. So I didn't mention earlier that a lab environment can really make or break your PhD experience. You know, I've had the opportunity to be in 3 different labs. So my master's lab, my PhD lab, and my postdoc lab, and they all had 3 completely different lab environments. Now, none of them were perfect, but I would say that, you know, there were some strengths in some of the labs, and there were also some weaknesses in some of the labs as well. And so that being said, you're never going to find a lab that is perfect, but, you know, you want to be in a lab that at least is constructive, that at least is an environment where you can grow, because you're only as good as the environment that you're in. So if it's a really destructive environment where there's a culture of maybe gossip, there's segregation, there's exclusion in the lab, that's not a lab environment, you know, where you're going to progress. It just isn't. And it may, you know, impact how you do your PhD, and it also will impact your experience. And you really don't want that. Another thing as well is finding a lab environment that is collaborative. I had the opportunity to be in a lab environment that was super collaborative, that every single project you're collaborating with the other graduate students or postdocs or research assistants in your lab. So it really helps kind of, you know, bring ideas together. You know, it helps you to strengthen skills in terms of your communication, working with a team, and such. So these are definitely a few things that I would take into consideration when deciding on a PhD lab. And so when I decided to commit 4 to 5 years of my life to a PhD, I would say that there still was that learning curve, even going from a master's to a PhD. And I would say that learning curve was based off of the fact that I was in a new environment. I had to learn, you know, some of the new instruments. I kind of had to learn the research project as well, even though it was a little similar to what I was doing in my master's. But still, the learning curve was there. It just wasn't as steep as the learning curve between undergraduate to master's. I would probably say that the hardest thing that I found, you know, going into my PhD was juggling all the responsibilities, like the responsibilities such as TAing, your research project, especially starting one up, the courses that you have to do, the PhD requirements that you know you need to complete by a certain date, and also sometimes mentoring students as well. So I found that there was a lot of different responsibilities that I kind of had to juggle. But I found that, you know, scheduling really helped with that because it really kind of kept me accountable to this is what I need to complete in this day. And it also prevented me from being overwhelmed by all the different things that I had to do. So I would definitely recommend, you know, scheduling out every single day when you're in your PhD or just generally when you're in grad school, I would say. But the one thing that I've always been big on, and I really, you know, tried to stick to this during graduate school and specifically during my PhD, was having a good work-life balance. And I would say it's very difficult when it comes to work-life balance and being in graduate school because of the demand on your time. But because I was very keen on scheduling my time, I made sure that when I was in the lab from like 8 to 5, I was 100% committed to my research, to my school courses, to all the different things that I had to do concerning my PhD. And then so when I would get home, that was kind of my own time to relax. And so I know that every lab is different and some supervisors will require you to be in the lab, you know, evenings and weekends and 24/7. Luckily, I had a supervisor who also valued a work-life balance as well. And he actually even discouraged us from going into the lab on weekends because he advised us not to be in the lab by ourselves just for safety reasons and such. Now, obviously, there's going to have to be some times where you work in the evenings or weekends. Like, for example, when I had courses, that usually took a lot of my extra time. But I find that, you know, because I was really strict with just having my me time and really trying to have a good work-life balance, I found that it really kept me mentally sane during my PhD because I worked with some people and I know some people that would work all around the clock, 24/7, you know, and there's always going to be more that you can do in the day. There's always going to be that one more experiment or you need to run one more assay during the day. But what's the difference between running it that night and the next day? You know, unless you have a deadline to meet, obviously. But I personally found that if I could prevent myself from having a mental overload from all the things that I was trying to cram in one day, it really helped me to be more productive from day to day. So this isn't all to say that my PhD experience was dreamy and was nice and it was perfect. It was not at all. There was a lot of bumps and I was frustrated and upset. I would say for like the first 2 years of my PhD, I didn't want to be there. I was not trying to be in the lab, and every day I would be like, why did I sign myself up for this? Why am I doing this? What's the point? What is it going to amount to? You know, I was asking all of those questions in my head. And the main reason for that, I would say, is that because there was just a lot of challenges. Like I mentioned before, there was the challenge of time management, you know, there is the challenge of getting a research project started, and there is a challenge of just reactions not working. And if you're in chemistry, you'll understand my frustration because it's like, how is it that I can do a reaction one day, the next day I do the exact same reaction and get completely different results? Like, how is that possible? Or how is it possible that I'm following a protocol exactly how it's written, and this protocol is published, okay? And I'm following it exactly how it's written, but then I get something completely different, or I don't get any product at all. So I came into those kind of situations over and over again. And I think the most frustrating one for me was when I first started my PhD and my supervisor gave me this project. And looking at this project, I was like, okay, this is going to be very simple. He wants me to make this one compound, and then we're going to test it for, you know, something that we were testing it for. And so, you know, I was looking up, okay, how do I actually make this? I was trying to see if there was any precedence for this specific molecule. And I did find one paper that was published in, I think, like the 1970s or 1980s. And I remember looking at it, and I'm like, okay, this looks a little sketchy, but let me just try this anyways and see if it's going to work. So I tried making the molecule like according to the procedure. And I remember the first time I tried, I got something completely different. So I was like, okay, that's fine. Let me just try again. And I tried again, something completely different. A product that I was not expecting. And so I remember, you know, I'm like, okay, maybe this is an opportunity where I have to modify something, maybe change the temperature, maybe add this, maybe modify this and that, and trying to troubleshoot my way to see if I could be able to make the desired product. And I remember just getting so frustrated at the end because I think it had been a month and a half of trying to troubleshoot and I got nothing, absolutely nothing. So then I'm like, okay, maybe this procedure doesn't work at all. So I looked into other ways of trying to make this specific molecule of, you know, different stepwise ways or, you know, trying to see if I can modify one procedure that was published to make the product that I wanted exactly. And this went on for, I would say, about a year to a year and a half. Spending a year or a year and a half to make one molecule that isn't even that complex, but just nothing was working. And so this is when I really learned how to be resilient, okay? So let me remind you of the definition of resilience. Resilience is the capacity to withstand or to recover quickly from difficulties. Now, this was a difficult time for me because it had been a year to 2 years into my PhD, and I had absolutely nothing to show for it. So at that time, I felt like a failure. I'm like, you know, I came here to my PhD and I'm already struggling. I don't even have anything to show for the 2 years that I've been here. I'm supposed to be halfway through my PhD and I have nothing to show for it. And I remember I was so frustrated, but every single day, I remember just thinking positively and picking myself up and saying, you know what, this is another day to try again. And I would go into the lab, I would get a new idea of what to try, and then I would try it. Didn't work? No problem. Okay, tomorrow is a new day. Let me go in the lab and try again. And I mean, mind you, there were so many other things that I had to worry about too. Like I said, the several responsibilities of being a PhD student that I had to manage as well. But when it came to my research, I really learned how to be resilient and to push through the difficulties. Essentially, just don't give up. You know, just don't give up. Now, not giving up doesn't mean you have to do everything at once at that time. Sometimes it may be a situation where you may not be privy to all the information, or you may not have all the knowledge or all the resources at that time. So maybe take a break from whatever you're doing, you know, build up your resources, build up your knowledge, and then you can revisit later. And so that's also something that I learned during my PhD, that you don't always have to complete everything at once. Sometimes you just need to grow a little bit more in your wisdom and your knowledge, and then you'll have everything that you need to finish the project that maybe was a difficulty beforehand. So to use myself as an example, you know, this project that I was doing a year and a half in, like I said, I had nothing to show for it. It was just giving me a very difficult time. So I paused and I was like, okay, I don't want to continue to spend all of my time on this project. I'm about halfway through my PhD. I need to put my time into something that's more productive. So I started another project, and from there, several other projects that I branched into. And then at the end of my PhD, when I was writing my thesis, I kind of went to go and revisit things and close things up. So I revisited the project that I first started my PhD with, And at that time, I was obviously more mature, I was more knowledgeable, I was a better chemist. And so I went back and I reanalyzed everything, just trying to see, okay, where did I go wrong? Or is there something that I missed? And I realized that what I was making instead of the product that I wanted was actually very novel. And it was a molecule that had never been made before, or at least was not in the literature at all. So even through this difficult time, because I stayed resilient and because I didn't give up on this project, I ended up discovering something that was completely new. So when it comes to resilience, I think of it as a journey, okay? I think of it as a line. You have your starting point and then you have your end point. Now, some people can just push through straight line from your starting point to your end point, but other times you may have to have detours. It may be a straight line up to maybe a quarter way, and then you may have to detour into another section, come back to the line, maybe detour into another section, come back to the line, maybe take a pause, take a break, come back to the line. But as long as you make it to the finish line, that's all that matters. Everyone's path is different, okay? Everyone's journey is going to be different, but I think resilience is a really useful skill, not even just for your PhD, but for your life as well. You know, I find that these days, a lot of people give up so easily. The littlest thing, you know, you give up. And that's not going to work in graduate school, to be frank. Because if I gave up at every single difficulty that came my way, you know, I had certain difficulties such as it was so hard for me to public speak. Okay. If I was like, oh, I can't do this anymore. I can't public speak. I can't do presentations. I wouldn't have been able to defend my thesis and I would have given up. There was other difficulties, like I mentioned in research. There was a lot of different challenges that I faced in my research where, you know, like I said before, you would do a reaction over and over and over again, and it just wouldn't work. Okay. If I gave up at every single time that a reaction didn't work, I would not have gotten my PhD. I think probably the first day I would have dropped out. So I think that's also the beauty of a PhD as well. Like, I find that a PhD teaches you that you don't know everything, because whenever you come to those difficult times, that's such a good opportunity to learn. It's such a good learning opportunity to be able to investigate and to discover, okay, why isn't this working? And then usually you're going to go down some rabbit holes and trying to understand how it works, but it also builds your knowledge of the field that you're in. And I find that, you know, you can never know it all during a PhD. Like during my PhD, I realized how much I don't know about chemistry. Even now that I have a PhD in chemistry, I will be the first to tell you that I'm not an expert in chemistry at all. There is a lot that I don't know. And I don't claim to be an expert in anything, to be honest. But I know that from the training that I went through and from the skills that I built during my PhD, that even though I don't know everything, I have the ability to learn and to understand anything because of the resilience and the investigative skills that I have built. So with that, I just want to leave you for today and say, don't give up. You know, do not give up. At the end of the day, things are going to be difficult. Things are going to be tough. But instead of thinking of those difficult situations as a failure or an added challenge or a frustration, think of it as an opportunity to learn. Think of it as an opportunity to investigate more, to create something new, to learn something new, because I think that's all part of the experience of a PhD. And that is what makes you a doctor of philosophy in a specific field. That is what brings you to the 1% of Canadians that are PhD holders. So thank you so much for listening, and see you next time.